Bill Jellison Hour, directed by Rudy Valley.
Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Valley and company. Our cast tonight is headed by Sir Cedric Hardwick, distinguished visitor from London, now being starred in the amazing Dr. Clitter House on Broadway. Sir Cedric makes his first American radio appearance tonight in an original melodrama. He'll be assisted by his wife, Lady Helena Hardwick. And among those present are Miss Wynn Murray, the 16-year-old girl who jumped from a church choir in Scranton to a lead role in the current Rodgers and Hart musical hit, Babes in Arms. Eric Ralph, the sound sleuth, who continues his investigation into strange noises begun so successfully here 2 weeks ago. Mrs. Ruth A. Brew, mother of Arlington Spangler Brew, who is very much better known to every member of this audience as Robert Taylor, picture star. Robert Taylor's mother will give us new and interesting angles on Robert Taylor. Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, America's favorite bad boy and his proprietor, America's favorite good ventriloquist. A final checkup, Graham. The people of the hour, Charlie McCarthy and Edgar Bergen, Robert Taylor's mother, Eric Ralph, Wynn Murray, Sir Cedric Hardwick, and Lady Hardwick. Now is the time for all good girls to come to the aid of the boss.
The boss is in a quandary. The boss is at a loss.
Now, if I can land this prospect, girls, it may mean a contract for life.
To whom is the letter going?
To my prospective wife. My dear prospective wife.
No, no.
My dear prospective sweetie, as I reply to yours of recent date, no, no. That's...
You sound as though you're drawing up a statistician's treaty. Suppose I help you out as you dictate.
You're just too marvelous.
You're just too marvelous.
Too marvelous for words.
Too marvelous for words.
Like glorious.
Like glorious.
And glamorous.
And glamorous.
And
that old standby amorous.
It's all too wonderful.
It's all too wonderful.
I'll never find the words.
You'll never find the
words. That say enough.
That say enough.
Or tell enough.
Or tell enough.
I mean they just aren't
you
well
mean
enough.
They just aren't well enough.
You're much too much.
You're much too
and
much.
And just too very, very.
And just too very.
To ever be
in Webster's dictionary.
So I'm borrowing a love song.
And so you're borrowing a love song.
From the birds.
From the birds.
To tell you that you're marvelous.
To tell you that you're marvelous.
Too marvelous.
Too marvelous.
Forward.
Forward.
May I express just one P.S.? You're just too wonderful. Too wonderful. Forward.
Fabulous.
No, your voice is nimbinabulous. It's all too wonderful, an ordinary word.
Like magical, mystical.
Just too apophysical. All the sweetest words in peace on fairy tales
are sweet enough
to be your panegyric.
And
we brought to your attention a young man named Eric Rolfe, who had dropped in on us a few days before with a new idea. The same idea being, in a few words, sounds are like people and vice versa. Mr. Rolfe's demonstration of this theory proved so interesting that we told him to pursue his researches further and report back this week. He's on hand now with more amazing noises, which he gives out with no mechanical assistance whatsoever. We introduce again the man of a thousand voices, Eric Rolfe. Eric, a lot of people have asked me this question in the last 2 weeks. How did you happen to hit on this peculiar idea, the notion of comparing sounds and personality?
You mean, Rudy, how long have I been nuts?
Well, if you want to put it that way, yes.
Well, it all began a long time ago. You see, Rudy, I wasn't christened Eric Rolfe. My real name is Ralph Moggleson Silverstocker. And, of course, at an early age, I was forced by circumstances to make noises that sounded like Rolf Moggleson Ilversacher, after which I don't think anybody would find other imitations difficult.
Yes, I can see that.
Well, the first time I was forcibly brought to realize the great similarity between people's voices and other noises was the first day I went to school. Now, Rudy, I didn't speak English as a little boy, and when the teacher asked me my name, I replied in my best Norwegian English, Rolf Magersen, Ylvisakers, and she said, stop croaking like a bullfrog and answer my question. Well, as an example of what I mean by saying that noises express certain people, Rudy, you've got a camp in Maine, haven't you?
Yes.
Well, up there, you've got an outboard speedboat, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Does the sound of that motor remind you of anyone? An actor who's appeared on this program here?
No, I can't say that it does.
Oh, Rudy. Everybody remembers Bert Lahr. Bert Lahr with his... All right, now, call back to your mind the sound of that outboard speedboat on slightly choppy water. And speaking of motorboats, all of you have heard the night noises from a lake, the tiny sounds made by crickets and little frogs. But did you ever let your imagination wander from one sound relationship to another? For instance, if the little night noises were more sustained, they'd sound a lot like a canary.
Well, let's hear the night noises again. And you know, I like canaries, so let's hear the canary now.
Canary's a little bit sick. Got mic fright. Anyway, did you notice how the last little cry of that canary sounded like the whine of a puppy? Listen. Now, perhaps that was the puppy that grew up to be the bloodhound that trailed so many killers on gangbusters. And that dog again sounds to me like another great comedian. Listen. Can you imagine, Rudy? There's a quality in Edwin's voice that makes me think of the jungles of darkest Africa. Look, have you ever listened carefully to the husky voice of the ever-present newsboy with his...
Hey, Westy! Westy! Read all about your big murder! Paper, mister, paper!
But notice closely. His cry starts out exactly like the hero of every newsboy, Tarzan of the Apes. Listen.
Hey, Westy!
But even in Africa, Rudy and audience, we have our little friend, the mosquito, who sounds exactly like one of my favorite actors, Stephen Fetchett. Listen. Speaking of insects, Rudy, Lou Holtz was on your program last week. Now, he has in his voice a quality that reminds me of a droning bee.
Mr. Lapeer, he stabbed my friend. He says, you understand me, he says?
Of course, once you get into the question of animal noises, the field is practically without a limit. For instance, I once saw Maurice Chevalier in a movie whispering into the dainty shell pink ear of some lovely young thing. And the way he said those few words sounded to me exactly like a cute little pig rushing to his breakfast. Well, I won't even have to imitate the little pig for you to see what I mean. Here's Maurice.
Not tomorrow, but right now.
Eric, let me stick my chin out at this point. What animal noise do I sound like?
You really want to know?
Well, go ahead. Don't mind me.
Okay. Let me hear you sing a few bars of your theme song, the way you used to sing it, of course. Let's hear Villa Dolly Valley.
All right. Here it comes.
My time is your time. Your time is my time.
Oh, you're cheating on me, Rudy. This is the way I remember it.
My time is your time.
We walked together in April rain. The city streets were country lanes. Have you forgotten the you and me that you we'd see a movie or do the zoo or window shop the avenue. Don't you remember the you and me that you to be? We love the organ grinders. Paid a man a dime to see the moon. We read the funnies every Sunday noon. Always together. Have you forgotten the fun we knew? The crazy things we used to do. What has become of the funny things that you do? Season now drawing to its close has been distinguished by the presence in our midst of three truly great actors from England: Maurice Evans, John Gielgud, and most recently Sir Cedric Hardwick. Mr. Evans made his radio debut here in St. Helena last winter. Mr. Gielgud refused all radio temptations, preferring to stick to his Hamlet. We hope to lure him to our microphone in London next month. Sir Cedric Hardwick is with us here tonight. Sir Cedric's career, one of the most brilliant in the history of the English-speaking stage, was crowned by knighthood in the New Year Honors List of 1934. He has played a tremendous variety of roles, from the larcenous physician of his current success, the amazing Dr. Clitterhouse, to the saintly bishop in the movie version of Les Miserables. Tonight you will hear him in a melodrama written for radio
by Donald Lindsay called The Conjure Drum. Heading a numerous cast in his support is Lady Hardwick, better known to New York and London playgoers by her professional name, Helena Pickard. For the first time on the air, Sir Cedric Hardwick, the play Conjure Drum. Our play opens in the deep night of Africa. Cyril Travis, lone white man in a jungle outpost, lies under a mosquito netting trying to sleep, but listening to the sinister drums beyond the clearing. Now, angry and overwrought, he calls his native servant.
Boy, Wonga, come here.
Yes, Master Travis. You call.
Why are those confounded drums kicking up to the beastly racket?
I not know, boss.
Don't lie.
I not lie, boss.
Yes, you do. Now tell me, what's going on out there in the jungle? That's the ordinary drum palaver. What's that big, deep drum? I've never heard that one before. What does it mean?
I no can tell.
You can't or you won't?
I not know, big drum.
Yes, you do. If you don't tell me, I'll go out and find them myself.
Oh, please, boss. You know who out. That big drum. That conjure drum. White man no can see. Big drum talk with moon god. Very secret.
Secret, huh? Some kind of devil business. Well, what is it? Come on, tell me.
Big drum, she very holy. Only which doctor can touch. Big drum she made from virgin skin.
You mean a human skin?
Very old. Very holy. But blood she keep drum young.
Blood? What sort of blood?
Every year this time. Drum get washed in blood. White man no can see.
Now look here, that's got to stop. The British king says no blood ceremonies in Kenya. You understand?
No. No man can stop big drum, boss.
No. We'll soon see. Hand me my shoe.
No. You can't go to that place, boss. Conjure make revenge on you.
Revenge? Nonsense. It's my job to stop that sort of devilry.
Conjure make revenge on you,
oh,
boss.
Oh, tight. I'm going.
Oh.
And I'll stop it. Now stay awake till I come back.
Oh.
Wonga! Boy!
Yes, boss. I come.
Is it still raining?
Yes, boss. Rain many days.
Oh. When will the doctor come again?
White doctor. Come again pretty quick.
Body sick very long.
Yes, boss. Many, many days.
Fever.
Yes, boss.
Very bad, huh?
Yes, boss. Oh. White doctor, he say you go home. Your own country.
Oh. England. Wonga,
huh?
Why is that drum going?
What drum?
Deep drum. Listen. You hear it now?
No, boss. You hear conjure drum?
Yes. Deep drum.
Oh.
Good morning, Captain. It's a bit fog, isn't it?
Yes, Mr. Travers, it is a bit thick.
Are we far out now from the coast of Africa?
About 100 miles.
That's too far for sounds to reach us from the land.
Sounds?
For instance, the sound of a drum.
You couldn't hear even the biggest signal drum from this distance.
Oh. You don't by any chance hear a drum now, do you?
No, of course not. Why? Do you?
Well, I fancy I hear something, but you see, I had jungle fever a while back, and that leaves the chap's nerves rather jumpy.
Yeah. Why? Well, I must be off now.
Thanks. I'll see you again.
Oh, listen to Clown. Clown.
To London?
Yes.
This way, please.
Oh, Porter.
Yes, sir.
Is there any construction work going on about the docks here? Any hammering?
Hammering, sir?
Yes. Don't you hear the sort of hollow hammering?
No, sir.
Thanks. Even in England. Oh, now come now, Travis, my lad, you've got to buck up.
Why, of all people, Sir Trevor, do come in, darling.
Oh, thanks, Marcia. How are you?
Perfectly toppy. And how are you? And you just back from Africa?
Well, a little while.
Come, do sit down. I'll make some tea. How long have you been back in London?
Oh, better part of 3 months.
3 months? Oh, Cyril, why didn't you tell me? I thought I'd be the first to know.
Well, you are.
Is something wrong? Here, let me have a look at you. You don't look any too sick.
Truth is, Marcia, I'm not. I had jungle fever and...
How dreadful. Aren't you fully recovered yet?
I don't know. All the doctors say I am.
Then you must forget the nasty old fever. Tell me something nice about Africa. It must be perfectly fascinating.
Some of it is.
What's it like? Living in Africa, I mean.
Well, it's very hot, smelly, and beautiful. Sometimes horribly queer.
I'd be thrilled to hear about the queer things in Africa.
Would you? Very well, I'll tell you one. I've got to tell somebody. Oh, Marcia, you're such an old friend that I won't be afraid to tell you.
Afraid?
Listen. One night, the native drums were going back in the jungle. My servant told me that one of them was a kanja drum made of the skin of a virgin.
Sir, you don't mean...
Yes, I do. And more than that, at this particular ceremony of the year, the witch doctor bathed that drum in blood.
Sir.
So naturally, I went out to stop them. Well, there were half a dozen blacks around the room. One of them warned me away, said no white man was ever allowed to see this conjure drum. He was holding a bowl of some thick liquid to pour over the drum. I knocked it out of his hand and ordered the drummers to stop.
Did they stop?
Yes. And then they threw themselves on their faces while the witch doctor cursed me.
Oh, but nothing happened to you except the thief.
Marcia, listen a minute and tell me. Do you hear a drum?
Now?
Yes, now.
No, I don't.
No. Nobody does.
Do you?
Yes, night and day, always going faster, faster, day by day, faster and faster and faster. Marcia, can't you?
Oh.
I shouldn't have told you. I know what you're thinking. There's fear in your eyes. You're thinking, I'm all alone here with a madman. Very well, Marcia, I'll go. Perhaps, heaven help me, you're right. I've come to you, Dr. Kronberg, because I've been to every sort of physician. They all say I'm physically sound. If I mention the drum, they say it's only my nerve.
Travis, it is evident that your case is one for a psychiatrist rather than for a medical man. A person can have a sick mind, you know, and a healthy body.
Doctor, am I insane?
Insane is a word we don't use anymore. You suffer perhaps from a psychosis.
I don't suppose, Doctor, you believe in witchcraft?
Certainly not. I'm a scientist.
Then there's no such thing as magic.
No. The human mind is a very delicate machine, and sometimes...
Then there isn't any drum for me to hear.
I don't doubt that you seem to hear it.
Seem to? I not only hear it, but I hear it getting faster and faster day by day. And I'm not imagining that. I want to stop watching my time, this devil's drum. Gets a little faster every day, a little faster until I... Oh, doctor.
Yes. Be calm, please. You're obviously overstrained. You need rest and quiet. I have in the country a little private sanitarium for people who need rest.
Rest? Quiet? Is that all you doctors know? I was a fool to come to you. Just because you're from Vienna and Charlie Guinea visit, that doesn't mean you know everything.
Now, please,
you can't
there.
Help me.
Please.
You know that, and you won't admit it. Nobody can help me. Nobody.
Oh, dear me.
What's wrong?
Officer, look.
What?
That man. Up on the window ledge. And turn it up.
Hey, you up there. Don't jump. Don't jump, I say. Don't. Hey, jump. Hey, jump that guy. I'm going to do it.
Let me through, I tell you, let me through, stand back. Can you hear me, sir? Oh, I beg you not to jump. It's a miracle you didn't break every bone in your body. Now, let me move your head a bit. Yeah, that's it. Just lie quiet till the ambulance comes. Can you give me your name, sir?
Travis. Officer, don't bother about me.
You're trying to kill yourself, sir. What for?
Somewhere in the jungle of Africa. Sometime soon. Which doctor will know about this? He will laugh. He will...
All right now, you people. Move away. The gentleman here... he's dead.
WEAF, New York.
Have you meet one of the younger members of our own party, Charlie McCarthy. Charlie, this is Wynn.
Charmed, I'm sure.
Delighted, Mr. McCarthy.
Oh, just call me Puddinhead. I saw your show last night, Miss Murray. I enjoyed it immensely.
Thank you, Charlie.
Mm-hmm. Yes, especially where you tell that little boy a bedtime story to put him asleep, you know. Would you tell it to me to see if I can go to sleep? Go ahead, will you? Go ahead.
Well, once upon a time, there was an opera singer called Johnny. He was the most selfish singer in the big opera house. Every time he sang duets with ladies, he would bellow so loud and hold his notes so long that nobody heard anyone but Johnny. So one day, a lady singer asked her fairy godmother to punish Johnny. Johnny was louder than ever the next night, and when he sang with the lady singer, he held his last note so long that he got all the applause. I can hold on to this note forever, he said. Then the fairy godmother came and said, you will, Johnny, you will.
And so couldn't he sing anymore?
Oh, he could, but he could only sing one note.
Uh-huh. And that's why they called him Johnny One Note, huh?
How did you know?
I saw the show.
Back to the trunk, Charlie. Johnny could only sing one note, and the note he sang was this.
Months or so ago, the heralds of Hollywood trumpeted forth to the eager ears of all the world a breathtaking, earth-quivering pronouncement. In letters of fire, their incandescent proclamation moved across heaven's firmament from the west even unto the east. Garbo loves Taylor, cried 20 million Mazdas. And behold, the people answered back, Garbo loves Taylor in Camille. What I'm getting at is this. The light should have read, Greta Gustafsson,
loves Arlington Spangler Brew, because then it wouldn't be necessary for me to explain that our next guest, Mrs. Ruth A. Brew, is the mother of Robert Taylor, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture star. It should be clear enough now, however, so may we present a charming lady from Nebraska, Bob Taylor's mother, Mrs. Brew. I suppose by this time, Mrs. Brew, you've become used to calling your son Robert.
No, I haven't, Mr. Valley. If I don't stop and think about it, I always say Arlington.
Well, Arlington, then. When Arlington was younger, did you ever suspect he was going to be an actor?
No, I didn't. I guess he sort of took it for granted that he'd be a doctor, like his father. In fact, he started a pre-medical course at college.
Was there any parental objection to his acting career?
No. You see, I don't believe in mothers trying to run the lives of their sons. Of course, plenty of people back in the home still think actors are a mighty wicked lot. But I'm not so prejudiced that way.
I see. You believe that actors can be just as nice and good as anybody.
And a whole lot better, probably. Anyway, I know Arlington's a good boy. And I'm certainly proud of him.
With excellent cause, Mrs. Brew. All of us liked him a lot when he was on this show, and he did a fine job of acting for us.
You ought to hear him play the cello, Mr. Valley.
That's right. He's a musician, isn't he?
Oh, yes. He really is an excellent cellist.
You mentioned the folks back home, Mrs. Brew. Just where is back home?
Our hometown, Mr. Valley, is Beatrice, Nebraska, about 40 miles from Lincoln. Population, oh, I should say about 12,000.
Back home in Beatrice, do you do the cooking for the family?
Oh, yes, always.
What was Robert's, or rather Arlington's, favorite dish?
Baked beans on Saturday night.
Now there, ma'am, you touch a responsive chord. I know all about baked beans on Saturday night.
You understand, Mr. Valley, I don't mean those pale-faced New York beans.
Perish the thought, Mrs. Brew. I mean dark brown beans. Beans baked with pork. Beans with molasses in their souls.
I guess you like them, too?
As a loyal son of New England, ma'am, I cherish the Boston baked beans next to my heart. And I want every woman listening to know how they're made, cooked. Suppose you tell us, Mrs. Brew.
Well, it'll have to be a sort of, by guess and by gosh, but I'll try. To begin with, you ought to have an old-fashioned coal burner cook stove. And then, if you want real baked beans for supper Saturday, you have to begin them on Thursday.
Certainly. You can't rush beans.
I should say not. Well, first you boil about, say, 2 cups full of beans and soda water for about 5 minutes. Then drain off the water.
2 cupfuls, boil 5 minutes, drain off soda water. How much soda in the water?
Oh, about a third of a teaspoon. After you drain off the soda water, you add 2 dessert spoons of salt, 3 tablespoons full of white sugar, 2 tablespoons of brown sugar, and a good big piece of fresh pork. A whole shank, if you can get it in the kettle.
Don't be stingy with the pork.
No, sir, it doesn't pay. Next, you cover with water and boil 20 minutes. And then pour into an old-fashioned stone jug. Now add 1/2 cup of molasses and 1/2 cup of ketchup. Put the jug in the oven and let the beans bake slowly until Saturday.
The result, believe me, fellow citizens, is a mess of beans fit for a king or a movie star. Mrs. Brew, has Arlington found anyone else who can bake beans as well as you do?
Well, he tells me Barbara Sandwich's cook does pretty well.
Is he going to be married soon, do you think?
No, he's too busy. His career and all that.
Do you want him to get married, Mrs. Brew?
Yes, I think any man, young man, is much better off married. You see, my own married life is extremely happy. I hate to see Arlington miss such a happiness for himself, even for a year or two. But I'd be the last one to tell him what to do.
I think your son was extremely fortunate in his choice of mothers, Mrs. Brew. And I thank you on behalf of all our listeners for visiting us tonight. And when we go to Hollywood, I'd like some of those beans.
Just let me know of a Thursday noon, Rudy, and I'll be waiting for you on Saturday evening. Good night now, and thank you.
Thank you. Without further ado, Edgar Bergen and Charles Pudd'nhead McCarthy.
Say, Mr. Bergen.
Yes.
Do you know Rudy's going to London for the coronation?
Yes, I understand he is.
Uh-huh. Yes. Did he invite you to go?
No. He hasn't said anything.
Hasn't said anything?
No.
Uh-huh. No, I did not.
No. Did he say anything to you?
Well, you promise you won't say anything.
No.
Well, he hasn't said anything to me either.
No.
But I sort of counted on it.
Yes.
After all we've done for him.
Yes, I know.
Yes.
You know, I rather expected him to ask us to go.
So did I.
Yes.
Well, that's a friend for you. That's a friend.
Yes.
Oh, he's nice enough around the studio, as long as you have a good act.
Yes.
Yes. After all we've done for him, too. And vice versa.
Yes. Well, Charlie, I don't know. I'm inclined to agree with you.
Yes.
Yes. I feel that we have been slighted.
Yes.
Openly slighted.
Mr. Bergen, we've been insulted.
Yes.
Yes. I know what we'll do.
All right.
I'll get even. We won't go.
Yes. But he hasn't invited us.
Well, I mean, if he does invite us, we'll turn him down.
Now, there's an idea.
Yes, we'll just say no. But nasty.
Yes, of course. Yes. Well, I'm not going to get enthused or excited about it because I know my work won't let me get away.
Well, this...
No. But I would like to see you go, Charlie.
Yeah?
Yes.
Why couldn't I work my way over?
Now, there's an idea. I tell you what, why don't you go as Rudy Valley's... A handyman.
Uh-huh.
Or you could go as his butler.
Butler?
Yes. Can you bottle?
A wattle?
I see.
Well, I didn't know what he said.
All right. I say, can you bottle?
Bottle?
Yes.
No, but I can split one with you.
Oh, I'm afraid you don't understand. You should go as a gentleman's gentleman.
Oh, yes.
Yes, you understand?
Yes.
You will go as a valet.
As a valet?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, now, I go as valet.
Yes.
How does Rudy go?
Well, now... So you will go as Rudy Valley's valet.
Uh-huh. You mean Rudy Valley Jr.
That's the idea.
Well, what do I have to do?
Well, you brush his clothes, you lay them out, you draw his bath.
Draw his bath?
Yes.
In watercolors?
Yes. Yes. And then, of course, you lay out his bathrobe.
Uh-huh.
Towels and the soap and the slippers.
Do I take the bath, too?
Oh, no, no, no.
Well, it saves a little.
Yes. Now, I'll tell you what. I'll rehearse you, Charlie.
Oh, thank you.
Now, I'll be Rudy Valley.
Okay.
Yes. And you, when you speak to me, you must address me as Milord.
And the what?
Milord.
Milord?
Yes.
Woo-woo-woo.
Yes, yes. Now, you will be my valet, Bertram.
Uh-huh.
That's your name.
Bertram?
Yes.
Oh, I'm Bertram?
Yes.
I see.
Yes, all right. Now, are you ready?
Go ahead, Milord. Go ahead.
Yes, all right. Bertram?
Yes, Milord?
I want you to personally carry on some of this luggage, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I want you to see that all the luggage gets on the boat.
It's quite so.
Yes. And we must have it on early.
Oh, definitely.
Yes. And I want you to see that it's carried on personally.
Yes.
By you.
Of course, of course.
There are 38 pieces.
Woo!
Yes, yes. And, of course, my town car is also going on.
Well, I'll need a little help with that.
Yes. Yes.
But don't worry, old fellow. It'll be on. Keep your pop up. Uh-huh.
You're awfully English, aren't you?
If I was any more English, I couldn't talk at all.
No, no. Now, you must understand, Charlie.
Uh-huh.
That if your master becomes, a little out of sorts.
Yes.
Yes. You must always remain cool and collected.
Oh, of course, yes.
You understand, regardless of what your master's condition is.
Oh, thanks, sir. Yes. Go ahead, be nasty.
All right, yes, sir. Bertram.
Yes, Milord?
What is that frightful noise? I can't stand noise.
Oh, you mean those conjure drums, Milord?
No, no, no. No, I mean that noise in the pantry, you idiot.
Oh, in the pantry?
Yes.
Why, that was the cook, Milord. She tripped over the cat and she spilled the tea set.
Oh, I see. Well, if it happens again, tell her she's discharged.
Very good, Milord.
Yes.
Anything else, Milord?
Yes. I want you to lay out my tweed suit.
Very good, Milord. Shall I lay out the cook first?
Yes. All right. And tomorrow I want to see the changing of the guards.
Yes. You want to see the guards change, Milord?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Might I suggest we put the front one in back and the back one in front?
All right.
I'll take care of that.
That's fine, yes. What time is it, Bertram?
It's half after.
Half after, yeah, yes.
time for tea. Might I suggest a spot of tea? With a piccolo, I mean a trumpet or whatever it is.
No, no crumpet, Bertram, no crumpet.
Very good, my lord.
Yes.
A spot of tea, Swiss tea, my lord? Might start your fancy?
No, I don't think so, not Swiss. Make it Cheshire.
Cheshire, my cheese. I mean Jesus, my lord. I mean...
You rattlebox silence. What's the matter with you? Oh, I guess it's those drums. It's the bum, 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 bum.
Pardon me, Charlotte, for interrupting.
Yes.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yes, me lord, me lord. Yes, me lord.
Not yet, Charlie. Oh, excuse me, not yet.
Charlie, I have a surprise for you.
Oh, have you? Oh, I know. I'm all ready to go. I'm practically packed.
Well, you don't understand. I'm going to London.
Uh-huh. I know. I'm right with you.
No, but you're not going with me.
I know. Huh? I don't go. Did you hear that, Mr. Burton?
Yes, I heard that.
Hmm. After all we've done.
Yes.
What we said about him goes double.
Yes.
I wonder if he cuts his own hair.
Oh, no. Yes. It looks... Looks like Valley's looking out for Valley.
Yes, and after all we've done for him, too. Yes.
You see, I have to leave someone here to take charge of my program, and you're the most capable man I know of, so I want you to take complete charge of next Thursday's broadcast.
Do you mean that, Mr. Valley?
I certainly do, Charlie.
Oh, did you hear that, Mr. Burton? I'm going to have charge of a whole program next week. Isn't that swell?
I think that's very fine. Yes. That's a great compliment to you.
Yes.
That was nice of Rudy.
That certainly was. He's a great guy.
Yes.
I like him.
Yes.
And why shouldn't we like him after all he's done for us?
Yes.
Oh, Rudy.
Yes?
When do I start being boss?
Right now, Charlie.
Right. Oh, boy. Burton, you're fired.
Goodbye, boys, goodbye. I'm leaving you today. I'm sailing on my way, far from the USA. I've got an invitation to see the coronation. Cheerio and toodaloo. So long, boys, goodbye, boys, goodbye, boys, to you.
Goodbye, boys, goodbye. Let you know, we all will miss you so, the moment that you go.
Well, write me care of Blighty, I think I like it mighty, cheerio and doodle. Well, so long,
don't stay long, goodbye, boy.
Can't expect to please everybody all the time, but you come as close to it as you ever will when you serve royal chocolate pudding.
To London town to see the way the king puts on his crown. On Saturday next, yours truly and a skeleton staff set sail for Merry England aboard the good ship Ile-de-France. Next week's show, the program of April 29th, will be in charge of Charlie McCarthy, and I'm not kidding a bit. Charlie, assisted, as it were, by Edgar Bergen, will be master of ceremonies. On May 6th and May 13th, our show will reach you over this station from London, the city in which the eyes of the world will be focused about that time. During those 2 weeks, we hope to bring you the very best in entertainment that England can offer. Don't miss our coronation broadcast, and by all means, don't miss Charlie's great show next week. This is Rudy Valley saying au revoir and goodbye.
This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.